G'day and welcome to Darwin's historic World War II oil storage tunnels. Soon we will guide you from the entrance point where you currently stand through the tunnel complex itself. But to tell the story properly, we must first roll the calendar back to the time between the World Wars. At the 1923 Imperial Conference in faraway London, a decision was taken to establish a Royal Navy refuelling depot in the far-flung Antipodean outpost of Darwin. Later that year, a site was selected behind Stokes Hill for a railway yard and tank farm, with construction commencing on four storage tanks in 1924.
Here is the Prime Minister of Australia, the Right Honourable R.G. Menzies.
Fellow Australians, it is my melancholy duty to inform you officially that in consequence of a persistence by Germany in her invasion of Poland, Great Britain has declared war upon her, and that as a result, Australia is also at war.
By the outbreak of World War II 15 years later, the number of above-ground oil storage tanks had increased to 11. Some of these still stand today on the hill overlooking Stokes Hill Wharf, down the road to your left. You'll also notice a fuel pipeline running parallel to the road just outside the entrance to the tunnels. This is a diesel fuel line running from the tanks to Fort Hill Wharf that is still in use by the Navy today. Please make your way into the complex now and down the access tunnel that takes you toward the pump station. But be aware that the surface underfoot can be wet and a little uneven, so we ask that you watch your step.
It is our privilege tonight to introduce the Prime Minister, the Honourable John Curtin.
Men and women of Australia, we are at war with Japan. That has happened because in the first instance, Japanese naval and air forces launched an unprovoked attack on British and United States territory.
On the 19th of February 1942, the Japanese battle fleet that had mauled US forces at Pearl Harbor only a few months earlier turned its attention to Darwin with devastating effect, and air raids continued throughout that year. The sites on which the above-ground oil tanks were constructed had been selected to afford them maximum protection from naval bombardment. Unfortunately, though, they were easy targets from the air.
Bless 'em all, bless 'em all.
By the middle of June 1942, only one of the 11 oil tanks remained, and over 20,000 tonnes of fuel oil had been lost. The Navy was shocked into action by these losses and ordered the construction of bomb-proof oil storage tunnels, which were to be bored into the plateau on which Darwin was built.
So cheer up, my lads, bless 'em all.
The original specification called for 8 horseshoe-shaped tunnels of steel-lined concrete. Gravel was to be brought from the 17-mile quarry and sand barged across the harbour from Talc Head. A workers' camp for 400 men was established and construction began in 1943 with an initial budget of 220,000 Australian pounds. By now, you will have made your way to the pump room chamber that serviced underground tanks 5 and 6. On the floor in the middle of the chamber are the two plinths on which the inline diesel pumps were mounted, and directly in front of you is the 78-metre-long tank number 6. The port through which you can view the inside of the tank is actually a plug hole. The only visual access when the tank was operational would have been through the vent you can see at the top of the ladder attached to the wall. On either side of the ladder, you will notice two pipe assemblies extending vertically to the full height of the tank. The multiple fittings on the sides of these pipes originally housed glass inspection bowls, so maintenance workers could detect the amount of water that had intruded into the tank. At the bottom of this assembly, there is a wheel controlling a valve that allowed this water to be bled off. Looking into the tank itself, you will notice that it is partly flooded, which tells a significant part of the story in itself, because water has been the nemesis of the whole oil storage tunnel project from its inception right through to its inglorious demise. Wet season rains, in combination with the soft, shale-like rock of the escarpment, caused havoc in the construction phase. Frequent collapses made it nigh on impossible to maintain the specified dimensions. Even when completed, artesian water seeped through the concrete walls of the tunnel and then found faults in the welding of the steel casing to penetrate the tanks themselves. The ongoing problems with construction and operation of the tunnels and the continual crippling delays resulted in an astronomical blowout in the projected budget to over £1 million, and the venture was shelved completely at war's end. The irony of the situation is that the Japanese air raids that had driven the necessity for the tunnels in the first place ceased at about the same time that the doomed project got underway. In the 1950s, with the Cold War at its height, local fuel distributor Stan Kenan negotiated the reopening of Tunnel No. 6. It was put to use storing the large amounts of avgas required to service the B-52 bombers operating out of Darwin at the time. The tank functioned quite successfully in this role for a number of years, until once again water intervened. In 1962, a particularly wet February saw 40 inches of rainfall and significant flooding followed. When maintenance crews failed to release the water accumulating between the tank's concrete shell and steel lining, the hydrostatic pressure buildup imploded tank number 6. Water poured into the tank and forced avgas up and out through the breather vents and into the streets of Darwin. Stan Kenan received a midnight emergency call about this disaster and immediately raced to the site. He began pumping the contents of tank number 6 into the much larger tank number 5. At one stage during the process, he was forced to hacksaw a faulty mechanism in the bottom of tank 5, a task which required being totally immersed in the knee-deep avgas. Not surprisingly, he became very ill with a near fatal dose of poisoning and spent a number of weeks in hospital recovering. In the wake of this incident, the tunnels were closed permanently and locked away from the public eye for 30 years. Please make your way now through the short linking tunnel that takes you to tank number 5. You are now at one bulkhead end of tunnel number 5. At 171 metres long and with a capacity of 38,500 gallons, the second largest of the tanks constructed. The cutout in the bulkhead that forms the entrance to the tank interior gives you an indication of the thickness of concrete that was required for the job. 533 millimetres thick on the walls and 635 at the top. As you enter the tank interior, you will notice the steel casing has been cut off at shin height. This is due to the fact that water pooled in the bottom of the tank for many years after the closure in the 60s. The lower sections rusted through and had to be cut away when public access was reinstated. The two channels you can see in the floor are not rail tracks, as is a common misconception, but drainage points that were utilised during the construction phase to drain the seeping arterial water out of the tunnel complex. There were originally five, and you might be able to make out the other three drainage points that have been filled in the tunnel floor. The photo gallery on the wall of Tunnel 5 runs in chronological order down the left-hand side, and many of these historical images are exclusive to the World War II tunnels. The mythical light at the end of the tunnel you can see is the emergency exit, which would bring you out near the deck chair cinema below Parliament House. There are bench seats along the way if you feel you need a rest, so please take your time to peruse the fascinating glimpse into Darwin and Australia's history that the gallery provides. We hope that you have enjoyed your audio tour and your actual tour of Darwin's World War II oil storage tunnels. Thank you, and enjoy the rest of your day in beautiful and historic Darwin.